He was in the Magic Kingdom as the Sooners emerged as the boss of the West bracket. Find his work for USA Today online, usatoday.com. Become a follower on Twitter. Use the handle at George Schroeder. He'll be taking a breather this weekend from the dance. We welcome in Mr. George Schroeder. How you doing, George?
Man, I'm good. How are you?
All right. Let's start with something in general. When you get down to the nitty-gritty, clutch performances kind of stand out. I watched Bill Walton score 44 points to beat Memphis for the 1973 championship. But you were there in person. Buddy Hield scored 37 points.
Not for Bill Walton in 1970, whatever that was.
1973.
Don't put us in the same era.
No, I said I wasn't there in person. I watched it on TV.
Yeah, and then you said, but you were there. And
I was specifying Buddy Hield Saturday, this past Saturday. I wasn't doing a give or take 43 years. 37 points. You've seen March Madness. You've been to all the big college football games. Of the major events you've witnessed, how high up the list was that for just an individual performance to achieve something like the Final Four?
Well, pretty high. I don't know if I would where I would rank it. I would say this. People began to know who Buddy Hield was beyond sort of the hardcore basketball fan when he had 46 against Kansas in that triple overtime loss in Lawrence in early January. You and I talked about that at the time.
Right.
I think people around the country who paid marginal attention to college basketball started going, who is this guy? What is this shooting show he and his teammates put on? But that stage, while big, it was a big Monday, was essentially not nearly, it was just a nice big stage. What he did against the Ducks was on, as big a stage as you can, get to the biggest stage, the Final Four. So I think in terms of that, I haven't seen anything like that on an individual level in basketball at the college level on that kind of a stage. Now, that's a lot of qualifiers. I get that. And you knew he was on early. It wasn't the first three-pointer he hit. To me, it was the second one. And if you remember this, and I know Duck fans are watching this, Elgin Cook did a really nice job, frankly, on Buddy Hield. Buddy Hield was just in another level. The second three-pointer, it was a step back in the corner on the baseline, and he shot it fading back. But as Mitch Richmond told me after the game, a lot of college players shoot fadeaways, and that ends up throwing their form off. He shoots fadeaways, and he goes straight up. And that's what he did. When he hit that, you were like, uh-oh, this could be one of those nights. And as it turned out, it was. So I haven't seen anything like that, to answer your question. I guess it would be the best way. I don't know how you rank him and who you rank him with. I've never seen anything like that in person.
Now, we had Toby Rowland on last week, the voice of the Sooners. He offered up some great personal insight on Hield, because when he arrived as a freshman, he wasn't a McDonald's All-American or a five-star. But now that you know his backstory, his family, the fact he seems to be just such a super nice young guy who has a true appreciation for all that's happening, is it kind of easy to say that actually makes it a better story?
Well, don't you think so? I mean, the whole thing, look, Oklahoma beat Oregon, and obviously that's tough because the Oregon fans wanted to win. And frankly, one of my sons was rooting hard for the Ducks, and then the little guy was rooting hard for the Sooners, so it made for a divided household. Frankly.
I saw that. But that was awesome pictures, by the way.
Yeah, and so little George is going to be unhappy for a while, and Christopher is a Buddy Buckets fan, so he's happy. But and of course, after all that, I lost your question. So that's not very good.
No. I just was saying, you cover a lot of stuff. Sometimes you don't get the insight. But everything we saw, what Toby Rowland told us, you listen to, he just seems like such a down-to-earth, affable, quality guy. And regardless of who you're rooting for, you just got to love the story even more.
Well, obviously, nobody wanted to see him do that to the Ducks. At least the Ducks didn't. But if you're just sort of a college basketball fan at large, and he's not playing your team, he is easy to root for because of his demeanor as much as his actual ability. I mean, he does it with a smile, and he has fun on the court, and it's not kind of a self-aggrandizing type of thing. And then you're right. He was a semi-sought-after recruit, but not a big-time recruit, just kind of a nice recruit. He arrived as a slasher, not a guy that people thought would be a big-time outside shooter, but as an athlete who could slash to the hoop. kind of a small forward type, even though he would have been a tweener at 6'4". And he's developed his game with, you know, many hours in the gym. And if you look at that team, they've got a bunch of guys that are kind of like that. None of them have obviously risen to the level of Buddy Hield, but they were not unbelievably highly recruited. They have stuck together for 4 years, which is also unheard of in basketball, and they've gotten better together. And so, you know, I think you've hit on some of the reasons why people love sort of the Buddy Hield experience, as long as he's not doing it to your team.
Well, I think in my case, obviously, I was hoping Oregon won, but afterwards, I was like, how do you not love this kid? We continue with George Schroeder, USA Today. I got to tell you the truth, I didn't know about the Lon Kruger-Dana Altman friendship and professional relationship. Your article pointed out something that was also really new. So if you would, the story of Kruger hiring Altman as an assistant at Kansas State, where Altman was working, and a player you just mentioned that Kruger was intrigued by.
Yeah, I mentioned Mitch Richmond, and I probably should have said who he was, because it's been long enough that he wasn't playing yesterday, and we forgot who he was. He's a basketball Hall of Famer, an All-NBA guy for years and years. And Lon Kruger was a first-year coach at Kansas State back in, it was 86 or 87, whatever year this was, when he recruited Mitch Richmond and a teammate out of Moberly Community College in Missouri, Moberly, Missouri. And the young head coach there was a guy named Dana Altman. And so Dana Altman got a job in part because he had, as Dana says this last week in Anaheim, I don't know if he hired me for my players. You know, he wanted my players, and that's why he hired me. But regardless, he and Lon Kruger are, you know, like two peas in a pod in how they go about things and their demeanor and the fact that they're both superior X's and O's guys, big time tacticians. And they've had a long time friendship that that's more than just the average coaching friendship. There's a lot of friends out there who are coaches, obviously. These guys worked together very closely, and they have stayed very close together since. And it all goes back to, the young head coach at Moberly Community College had himself a really nice team with a couple of really nice players and won a lot of games, and Kansas State needed an infusion of talent in the worst way, and boom, there they go. So they hired, not only did they get the players, they hired the community college coach as an assistant, and those guys became fast friends.
And just wound up matching up on Saturday. Had never
coached against each other, period, which, you know, they never wanted to schedule each other because they didn't want to coach against each other. And you figured they would have gotten matched up in something over the years, and it never happened. They've both been, you know, head coaches for, since the mid-early 90s, they've both been head coaches. And, you know, I know Lon Kruger was away in the NBA coaching the Hawks for 4 years, but mostly, you know, for most of the last quarter century, they've been head coaches at the high major level.
No, it was amazing how long it took to cross paths. Last Thursday, when Oregon played Duke, and we're forgetting about Coach K and Brooks, and we talked about it last weekend and acknowledged, as far as the magnitude for the Ducks, obviously you covered this program, and now on this stage, in essence, taking out the greatest program of the bracket era, and in a convincing manner. You were there. How impressive and important was that victory for the Ducks?
Well, it was really important. Look, I think getting to the Final Four would have been the piece that would have gotten everybody that changes a program. I don't know that getting to an Elite Eight causes a change in perception, because you get that extra week of basking in the glow if you get to the Final Four. And so I wish for their sake they'd been able to do that. That said, it is important to get to the Elite Eight, and how they got there was as impressive as anybody all week or all through the month of March, is what I'm trying to say. Not only did they beat Duke, they beat them resoundingly, and they looked like the much better, much more athletic, much superior team. And the reason they look like that is because they were, in every way, shape, and form. And I was struck by a couple things. First, if they hadn't had Duke on the front of the jersey, you would have just thought, you would have thought, you know, this is just kind of an average team, because they were. And by Duke standards, they were really below average. But the second thing is, I loved how athletic the Ducks were. It feels like they run like three and four guys out there that are all the same guy at the same time, kind of 6'4 to 6'7, all can do very similar things and all cause all sorts of problems on both ends of the floor for the opponent. and just so athletic. And then I liked the way they played so free. And I thought that was really important, because I think when you get into a game with Duke, a lot of times they get points just because of the front of the jersey. And I didn't get the feeling that Oregon was bothered a bit by that. And so I thought it was as impressive a performance as we had seen in the tournament to that point, no question.
The other game Thursday, you had A&M off that crazy comeback against Northern Iowa facing the 2 seed, and they got torched. That game was never closer than 13 in the second half. So from your chair, were you at all surprised at the ease with which the Sooners won? And any logic to when a team like Texas A&M has to go through all that and pull a rabbit out of their hat, maybe the magic runs out for next game?
Yeah, maybe, I guess. Or maybe some people would have said, well, hey, they may have momentum after doing that. That, you know, they should have not been in that position against Northern Iowa. And having survived that scare, they might have a confidence that they could get some things done. In any event, they ran into a buzzsaw with Oklahoma. And in this case, it wasn't the Buddy Hield show. He had 17, which is, you know, 8 points below his average. But the other guys, you know, Jordan Woodard, the point guard, had 22. And they had other guys that made big plays. And so it sort of showcased the rest of what Oklahoma can do well. I think going into the Sweet 16, if there was a team I had the most questions about, it was Texas A&M. Talking about the West region, and it's because while they had beaten Northern Iowa, they probably shouldn't have. And Northern Iowa had controlled that game up until about 33 seconds left, or whatever it was, in the second half. And so, you know, that I had questions about them, because you kind of wondered if a lot of their resume was built on beating teams in what is a pretty bad league, the SEC.
Yep.
And as it turns out, I think that's the case. Now, they're athletic. But I got to tell you, I think Oregon would have beaten them by at least as much as they beat Duke. I don't think they matched up with anybody in the bracket, with the possible exception of Duke. And so Oklahoma was impressive in beating A&M. But coming out of that Thursday night, I thought easily that, you know, Oregon had been the more impressive of the two winners.
All right, final thought, now that you've been back home, you've got a pro team in your backyard, the Thunder, were the hottest team in the NBA until they lost last night. And I know it's only about 20 miles from Norman to Oklahoma City. So what you've read, observed, and heard, are folks buzzing at all about that NBA franchise with the playoffs coming? Or right now, is it all about Oklahoma in the Final Four?
No, well, just for this week, it's about Oklahoma in the Final Four, and we'll see what happens after that. But there's no question there's a buzz about the Thunder that's been there since Durant and Westbrook, you know, got together and really got things cranked up. And there's a buzz this year with a bit of underlying angst about what happens after the season with free agency and what does Kevin Durant do. Even though the prevailing notion seems to be, and I have, you know, this is just a notion, I don't know that there's any solid, you know, info on this, but the notion seems to be that Durant may sign a one-year deal, which would allow him to play one more year with Westbrook, whose deal is up at the end of next season.
Right.
And then that, you know, creates a serious tension for next year, but at least it puts off the issue of whether or not Durant leaves. And, you know, and then you at least have the hope, as an Oklahoma City fan, they would at least have the hope that those two guys might stay. And it's one more year to pursue a title if they don't get it done this year. But there is some excitement about it. I guess the other answer to your question is, because of what the Warriors have done all year long and have done to the Thunder as well, I think the excitement about whether they can win a title is kind of muted at this point. I mean, they'll get cranked up when they get to the playoffs. People will be excited to see what they can do, but I don't know that anybody believes they can beat the Warriors, maybe not even the Thunder themselves.
Now that the Elite Eight game is behind, will there be more of a sense of unity in the Schroeder household and everybody unite behind Oklahoma for this weekend?
Well, I think there's going to be a cold war between the two boys for a while. it truly doesn't matter to me. It was the worst of both worlds for me last on Saturday, because I would have liked to have seen them both win. I know people who surround the program at both places and like and respect them. So, it was like, I guess you could look at it as a win-win for me. It was almost a lose-lose for me, and that's before we ever bring in the the two boys who had decided that they were going to choose opposite sides. So, you know, we'll see what happens this weekend. I know Christopher will be rooting for Buddy Buckets and he'll be joined by a whole lot of people around the country.
All right. Hey, George, great stuff as always. Enjoy your time in a divided household, and we'll catch up with you next week.
All right. Listen, I got to tell you, everybody should look forward. Depending, obviously, things can happen in the off season in terms of people staying or going, but if that nucleus returns intact for the Ducks, you know, I think there's a really good shot we could see another really nice run next year.
No, no question. There's a lot of fingers crossed around here, George. Enjoy your time off this weekend, and we'll catch up with you next Wednesday.
All right, man. Thanks, Steve.
All right, take it easy, George.